On risk, or if you play, you pay. The Politics of Chance in a Plague Year. Written by Mark Kingwell. Narrated by Braden Wright. Epigraph. 20-volume folios will never make a revolution. It's the little pocket pamphlets that are to be feared. Voltaire. I liked Mr. Josie's face very much. It was a face that had not been sculptured for a quick or facile success. It had been formed at sea, on the profitable side of bars, playing cards with other gamblers, and by enterprises of great risk, conceived and undertaken with cold and exact intelligence. Ernest Hemingway, Pursuit as Happiness. Preface. The Plague Years. If you play, you pay. A simple truth. But some pay more than others, and a lot of the time, past winners keep on winning. Risk is theoretically neutral and indifferent, an exercise of pure randomness. But as the 2020 pandemic has shown us, when natural forces meet social and cultural conditions, risk can get redistributed very fast. We're not really all in this together. The eternal human story is that some people win, others lose, and often the first is true only because the second is likewise. The current realities have offered a forced education in the politics of risk, a bleak tutorial on taking chances. Education is, all by itself, what Gert Biester calls a beautiful risk. Lighting a fire, not filling a bucket, as Yeats said. Socrates, that risk-taker in the service of education, understood the risks all too well. In Plato's Phaedo, Socrates drinks the hemlock, decreed for those convicted of corrupting youth and praising false gods, and reminds his friend and neighbor, Crito, to sacrifice a rooster to Asclepius, son of Apollo and a divine healer. This is not because Socrates wants to be resurrected, a power that Asclepius was thought to have, but because he wanted to acknowledge his debt to the release of the soul from the body's prison that comes with death. The scene was depicted heroically in 1787 by the French neoclassical painter Jacques-Louis David, with a very buff Socrates pointing to the heavens and reaching for the poisoned chalice as Plato is bowed in mourning at the foot of his bed. We moderns don't usually have the same view of death, or of the soul, or even of education. But we face the same mortal challenges. An old saying, sometimes attributed to Cicero, says this: "To philosophize is to learn how to die." You may be wondering, what could this mean? Start with what it doesn't mean. Learning how to die does not mean that philosophy is a kind of nihilistic death cult, a sort of cabal of necronauts with one foot in the grave and the other on a metaphysical banana peel. True, we philosophers are perfectly capable of doubting the existence of rocks and trees, or believing that this entire ceremony is a simulation in some alien's supercomputer, but for the most part we live just like other people do, though with more free time and less fashion sense. A more plausible interpretation of learning how to die is the one held by the Stoic philosophers. Death is the ultimate inconvenient fact, the outcome we cannot alter. We can be smart about how to estimate, and even be just about the entailed risks of a mortal existence. We can embrace this nothingness at the limit, and thus defeat the fear of dying. This then opens up the only immortality known to humans, namely living on in the memory of others. Which sounds great, but as Woody Allen once said, "I don't want to live on in the hearts of my countrymen, I want to live on in my apartment." No, I think learning how to die really means living with a sense of urgency and purpose. Only the presence of a deadline can provide this. The added twist is that we don't know exactly when the deadline will fall. Which brings me to risk in a more physical sense. In 1984, I met a man called Raymond Eric Bill Loverseed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?